It's now over half a century since I became Franz's research student. I received a letter from Professor Massey stating that I was eligible for a postgraduate grant, £320 a year, and I was asked to report to Eric Barrett, who told me there was a vacancy in the Microtron group and that I should go and talk to Franz and to Dick Jennings, and no doubt they would ask me some questions. So I felt a bit worried because I hadn't thought about physics for about 3 months. I thought I'd probably have to do national service. But in fact, they only asked one question, whether I smoked. They then each took a cigarette from me, and I was in. It was a small group, certainly by today's accelerator standards, two staff members, two or three research students at various times, and the occasional visitor. In those days, of course, you had to build your own accelerator. A small 4.5 MeV Microtron was in operation, and there were plans and designs in progress. I think this is a bit too high. We're building a 28 MeV machine. Well, Franz showed me by example how to do research, and he was a really excellent supervisor. I mean, since the whole group were building a machine, we were in daily contact, which was very, very useful. Franz sort of guided me and pointed me in the right direction, but he allowed me to make mistakes, and I was pretty good at that, and perhaps to learn from the mistakes, which sometimes I did. Franz had lots of ideas. He was always cheerful, friendly and helpful. He taught me certainly a lot about physics, about accelerators, detectors, about life in general. And I really didn't realise at the time how lucky I was. I thought all supervisors were that good. In the late 1950s, Franz became one of the first users of CERN, as you've heard. And in early 1959, I was lucky. I received an invitation to attend the International Accelerator Conference in CERN. Now, travel for postdocs in those days to overseas conferences was almost unheard of, and I had no budget. So I phoned ASIR, that's the sort of equivalent of the present-day Research Council, and after a long sort of fumbling at the other end of the phone, I was told, yes, you can use UCL budgets XYZ for the travel to Geneva, provided that Massey agrees that you can dip into that budget. But since Massey had passed on the invitation, I thought he probably would agree, so I didn't worry. This was in February. The conference was in September, so by about July I thought, well, I'll find out about this travel grant. So I went to a departmental accountant whose name I can't remember any longer. He was very good though. But when I told him about this grant, he said, XYZ, that doesn't sound like a travel grant. So I went into his filing cabinet and he looked and he said, that grant just covers your salary, my salary. So I was allowed to use my salary. And I said, well, doesn't it cover anything else? He said, yes, David Aitken's salary. That's better. But anyway, in the end, Franz bailed me out and allowed me to dip into his travel budget. Not into his salary, into his travel budget. In fact, I was very lucky because the only way he could get away with that was to make me a consultant. So I was actually allowed to fly instead of going by train. And anyway, my wife Trixie and I combined the trip to Geneva with a short holiday. And while we were in Geneva, we stayed in a flat that Franz and Doug Davis had organised. Well, Trixie and I much valued our friendship with Franz and Marie. And although I didn't work with Franz since the late 1950s, we did visit each other socially quite often, and we met at various places till his retirement. Franz, I think, may have also influenced another aspect of my physics activities. I think around 1958, Massey was asked to find somebody who would go and give physics talks to women's institutes and similar audiences. And I think what happened was that the request sort of went down the line, and Franz pointed the finger in my direction, And in any case, there was no one lower than me. So I was given the task. But I enjoyed doing it, and I've continued with it, and now in my national retirement, I spend a lot of effort on these outreach activities. And in fact, the last time I saw Franz and Marie and Gail, last time I visited them a few years ago was during an Institute of Physics lecture tour, their school's lecture tour. More recently, last October, I gave physics talks in India. And at the University of Pune, I was shown a microtron. It was really sort of looking like, you know, the technology of 40 years ago. And it was constructed many years ago by their then head of department, Mado Binay, who was a former member of the UCL microtron group. And while the microtron was being constructed, Franz visited Pune for, I think, a few weeks and helped them to get the machine going. And he's still remembered there by many people with great affection and fondness for his generous help and advice. Well, after my time at UCL, Franz, of course, successively was promoted to reader and professor and head of department. And he was not only a gifted physicist, but he was a great human being. He had many interests. In the 50s, he was one of the first people who was interested in stereo sound systems. That was then in its infancy. And I remember once that he took me to his house and said, listen to this stereo record, you know, a very early stereo record for testing his system. And I thought I would probably hear some classical music. But in fact, it was a recording of a table tennis match. Anyway, Franz's interest in stereo continued, and the last time I saw him a few years ago, he was using a computer to reconstruct great organ music. And although he had quite a sophisticated commercial software package which did have organ sounds, they weren't genuine enough for him. So he actually constructed the organ sounds note by note by mixing harmonics. Very labor intensive. And when I asked him how long this took, he said, well, less time than it would take me to learn to play the organ. He was a great guy, and we shall miss him.